Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Doug Kazarian, formerly ESPN, now with Bet Rivers, will join us. We will go over the NBA playoffs, the NFL draft, as a pretty good weekend and a pretty exciting set of series. I'm recording this Sunday night, halftime Rockets Lakers. So don't know that result. The Rockets are up 9, but as we know with the Rockets, if you watched the other night, 9-point lead might feel safe, but a 6-point lead with 30 seconds left and the ball also feels safe, and that did not result in a win Friday night. My goodness, you could play that game 1,000 times. I still can't believe they blew it. And the way they blew it, almost lost it in regulation. So we will see here. By the time you listen to this, the Rockets will have forced a Game 5 or will have been eliminated. And let's just say they can keep it alive. You've got a few series here that are getting interesting. Now, some of these are basically all but over. OKC, Phoenix, that was over before it started. Philly, Boston, over for all intents and purposes. And San Antonio with another rally. Portland had chances to win both these games this weekend. San Antonio goes home up 3-1. That is pretty much over. So, but that leaves you with four, maybe five pretty good series. Pistons, Magic, which, as you guys know from listening to this, I am into. I am wrapped up in the Magic. They play Monday night. T-Wolves, Nuggets, that is interesting. Knicks, Hawks. Who, Knicks got the win they needed to get Saturday, got it back to even. Now it's best 2 out of 3 with 5 at home, 7 at home. Figure they're probably in good shape. That game is Tuesday. They're laying 6.5. And then Raptors, Cavs. It looked like Cavs won the first two games so easily. Game 3 was a toss up, like middle of the third quarter. I was doing this, watching the draft, recording the pod, and Toronto hit a zillion threes, wins the game. All right, you got your win. Cleveland probably comes back, takes care of business game 4, and that's what it looked like. And then just a late rally by the Raptors. That is 2-2. So, boy, if you bet the Magic to win the East, obviously a long way to go, but you are dreaming somehow that the Magic A advance, which is the most important part, and that they are somehow facing the Raptors here in a week or so. I don't think that'll be the case, but that is at least on the table here for an Eastern Conference here that's pretty wide open. So the series are good. I mentioned it. Look, I don't want to sit here and just go over and over the same talking points, but Magic getting 2.5 on Monday, I think they win. I thought they thoroughly outplayed Detroit for a lot of the game. Boy, I would have been annoyed if they blew that game on Saturday afternoon because they were up 17 with 8 minutes to go. I'm feeling great. Going to be up 2-1. It's down to 12, 9, 6, 3, and then they're losing. And usually when you're the underdog, they weren't a big underdog, but they're they are the 8 seed. They were the home underdog. Usually you have the big lead like that, and you blow it, and you're behind. It's hard to go win the game again a second time, but they did. Closed out really strong, won the game by 8 points. And now, I think, similar to what I said about Game 4, Knicks and Hawks, I think winner of Game 4 here, Magic and Pistons, probably wins the series. I'm going to go with Orlando because I think if Orlando got up 3-1, probably figure out a way to win one of the last three. And if Detroit can get it to 2-2 with 5 at home, 7 at home, you got to favor them. So to me, it's all the things I've been talking about. You can't bully the Magic. You can't out-physical them. Detroit was a lot of effort, a lot of physicality. Those advantages are just not there in this series. And Orlando's got a chance here to go up 3-1. And the two games Orlando has won have not felt like an upset. Minnesota, Denver's fascinating. Edwards is gone for the foreseeable future. Hyperextended knee. That is probably, weeks, close to a month. And it's amazing. It's amazing how many superstars get hurt in the NBA and the NBA playoffs. The last few years, it's becoming a major problem, a recurring problem. And all these measures to keep these guys healthier, load management and, sitting out and resting and all the modern science, nutrition, it's almost like the pitchers getting hurt in baseball. It's like the more you try to protect them, the more hurt they get. Last year, it was Tatum and Lillard and Halliburton and Curry. This year, you've had Durant miss a bunch of games. Luka, Edwards, Embiid's been out. You just go down the line. Gordon's hurt for Denver. I'm probably missing player. I mean, it's incredible how often these big-time players get hurt. But Denver, it's looked really bad. Jokic has looked bad. Now, of course, you got the Jokic haters coming out saying, he never deserved to be MVP. He was overrated this whole time. I think you can kind of hold two thoughts at the same time and say, he's played poorly. He's been awful. He's absolutely fair game for criticism. He's a big reason why they're down 3-1. But none of that stuff's really true. I mean, this is a guy that's really close to winning 4 or 5 MVPs, and none of them are, gifts or unjustified or anything like that. But 10.5-point favorites here on Monday, a quick turnaround. Only a slight dog Denver is on the series price just because of the injuries with Minnesota. I don't think Minnesota, now maybe Gobert and McDaniels enough to win one of these games even in Denver, but I really don't think Denver with this banged up Minnesota team, who's not only down Edwards, but Dante DiVincenzo, torn ACL, he's done. A shorthanded Timberwolves team on the road, a desperate Nuggets team. I figure Denver will force a game six. If it ever got to seven, you obviously favor Denver, especially with, you know, the injury status for Minnesota. To me, it'll come down to game six. So I understand people wanted to take a shot on Denver plus money to win the series, figuring, you know what, they'll be favored in game six. And that's the hard one. The other ones, they should be able to take care of business. But, you know, it's like having a three-team. It's exactly the same as having a three-team parlay where it looks easy on paper. Oh, I'm a favorite here. I'm a favorite there. Upsets do happen, and you've left yourself no wiggle room whatsoever. And even if you win and you rally back, you're going to have to go through a seven-game gauntlet in this series. Spurs will probably be waiting and rested. And if Minnesota gets through, Minnesota's not going to have Edwards most likely for the Spurs series, at least most of it, if not all of it. So the Spurs got a huge, huge break with Denver either getting eliminated, or they get a tired Denver team or a banged up Minnesota team. Let's be honest. It's going to be OKC versus San Antonio. And it feels a lot like the Rams and the Seahawks was in the playoffs, where that's the true title round. You figure whoever won Rams Seahawks in the NFC title game was probably going to win the Super Bowl and beat the AFC. Feel very similar, probably even stronger here, that will be the case. OKC versus San Antonio in a few rounds. I do hope the winner of that is somehow going down to Disney to face Orlando and the Magic for a couple of games. But we'll see. Orlando now 40-1 still at DraftKings. I'm surprised it's that high. FanDuel down to 27-1, so that number continues to drop as the East Conference bracket breaks the way it does. And we'll see here. Obviously, a huge, huge game on Monday. I still think the Cavs are in good shape to beat the Raptors, but hey, it's now best 2 out of 3. Very little margin for error. Knicks with home court, I figure we'll probably figure out a way to get 2 out of 3. It'd be a disaster if they lost this series, either lost, you know, a fifth game at home or a deciding seventh game in Madison Square Garden. That would be a brutal loss, and one that would get them asking some serious questions in the franchise. Like I said, the other series, Suns Thunder, Celtics Sixers, and Spurs Blazers, pretty much dead until further notice, and we'll keep an eye on the Rockets. So I do think if you're listening to this and the Rockets are still alive for a game five, you never know. LeBron's 41. He's carrying a lot of the workload. He could always get banged up. He could get worn down. Rockets have a lot of young athletes. They're painful to watch, but it's funny. You watch them in these playoffs. They can't make a three to save their life. They're actually top 10 in the league in three-point percentage, which is weird because you look at them and it's like, man, they've never shot a basketball, but they're actually a pretty good three-point shooting team. A lot of that's Durant, and Durant out for a while now, but it is tough to watch them. And I still can't believe they blew the game on Friday night the way they did. How about, I like that. That's a good team. Ian Eagle, obviously, you know, buddy of ours, Stan Van Gundy, does a good job, and he called the game over. I can't kill him for that. The game seemed over. You know, you can't just sit there, and you know, a lot of these announcers go, oh, a lot of time left, and there's a minute, and it's a 15-point game. I like the fact that he's willing to, you know, take a stand and say things and have opinions. And that wasn't even a controversial one, but I get it. When you state the game is over as an announcer and that team loses, you know, you're ripe for criticism, but I had no problem with that. But the sideline reporter, Cassidy Hubbard, who usually does a pretty good job, right after the game, she's interviewing LeBron, and it's one of the more remarkable, miraculous comebacks you will ever see. I'm sure in the hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of games LeBron has played in his career, I don't know that there's a better comeback or a better two or three comebacks. That's on the very, very short list, just how remarkable it is. Again, down six, 34 seconds left, and you don't have the ball. I mean, you're in the foul zone, so you need a turnover and a three and another turnover, another three, and then Rockets still have a chance to win it at the end of regulation. You need another stop, and then you need to win in overtime. And it's like hitting a nine-leg parlay. Speaking of parlays, you had to hit. And Cassidy Hubbard doesn't ask about the comebacks. She goes, you're 41. How do you feel? How do you feel to throw to Bronny? What do you think? Like, nothing about, hey, this is one of the more ridiculous comebacks you'll ever see. Have you ever been part of a comeback like this? Did you ever think the game was over? Anything like that. Didn't even address the comeback, which I thought was odd. So that's the NBA. Good night Monday. Some good series here in the first round, although I do ultimately think we're looking at, as much fun as it is to have these games to watch and to bet on and who's going to come out of this series and who's going to, you know, advance in the East, to me, you can pretty much fast track this to a couple weeks from now, a best of seven OKC versus San Antonio. I hope we get it at this point. I mean, they're both young. There's a little nastiness with each other. Wemby trying to slow down the juggernaut Thunder. It's just a lot of different, you know, Holmgren. There seems to be a little animosity between Holmgren and Wembanyama. So hopefully we get it. I think we will get it And you know, the way things are going, I'm not sure. Unless Wembanyama got hurt, which I really hope doesn't happen. I mean, there's just so many of these injuries, but that's always the caveat of, you know, this looks a certain way. This is going to happen with all these star players getting hurt one after another. You can't really pencil these things in, although that is certainly what's likely. We'll talk draft with Doug Kazarian. I guess I'll save it for him. It's funny because, look, these GMs put in a lot more work and have a lot more knowledge about these players than I do. So for me to say, oh, bad draft, bad pick, how could you pick that guy? Feels a little silly, but also, look, it's an opinion show, so you got to give takes. I thought Philly, who always does a good job, mentioned on Thursday, Mekhi Lemon, the receiver, going to be a good player for them, I think. Very bizarre interview after. Seems a little off, but you know what? Just catch the ball and you'll be fine. Dang on to it. And then they got Eli Stowers, the tight end from Vanderbilt. He's a monster player, athletic, huge. So a passing game and receiving game that needed a little retool that could be a little clunky. And that was kind last year, where it's tush push. And it felt like, you know, a car on its last legs, where every time you got down the road, it was just a chore to go, you know, 20, 30 yards and get a couple first downs. Now they got a little more juice, a little more explosiveness. I like what they did. Pittsburgh, I don't know what the plan is. I mean, we all watched Drew Aller at Penn State. To use any pick on him, I know it's a lottery ticket, but that's pretty early to pick a lottery ticket. You know, where they grabbed him, seemed like they were caught off guard that Lemon got swiped from them. They didn't really have a backup plan, and that was sloppy the way they handled it. So I'm not sure Pittsburgh's one of these teams, we always talk about it too. Just total limbo. They're trying to compete, but they're not good enough to compete. They're not bad enough to be near the bottom. And DraftKings, and give credit to DraftKings, and look, it benefits them. They put all this stuff up, offensive rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year. It's way too early to be betting this stuff, to tie up your money for this long for a guy that could get hurt. But they also have the fewest wins market. And it's interesting. Everyone, I think if you ask most people, would say Jets or Browns, Dolphins. Arizona is the short shot here, plus 200 to get the first pick. So we will see. We will have plenty of NFL to talk about. If I had to bet one NFL, I was doing the show. John Jastrzemski and I do the Sunday morning show on VSiN now, 9 a.m. Eastern to noon. Go to VSiN.com. Nesson Plus, it's on a bunch of places. Love JJ. It's fun to work with him. We were just going over the odds, looking at the odds. He liked the Cowboys, which I can't argue with. You know, you add a big-time playmaker on defense like Downs. They made some trade deadline moves that improved the defense last year, and they played a little better. They got Lawrence, another first-rounder. If they could just be adequate on defense, that is the elite, Super Bowl-level, elite kind of offense. So Dallas, he likes Dallas at 22-1 to me. And it's not a homer pick because, you know, I'm very critical of my teams when it's warranted and whenever I feel like it, which is often. Minnesota at 55-1 has a lot of talent for a 55-1 team. They won 9 games last year with awful, awful quarterback play. McCarthy was a little better towards the end of the year, but they were dreadful at quarterback and still won 9 games. If they can just get, and I feel like we said the same thing last year, and it's not always easy to get average quarterback play, but if you can get just an average-ish Murray, keep him healthy, you know, it doesn't kill you with turnovers or injuries, and he's thrown to Jefferson and all these different guys, pretty good offensive line, good defense. Minnesota at 55-1. I wouldn't be shocked if they bounce back and have a good season here. They won 14 games a couple years ago. Obviously, that was pretty fluky, although Darnold did turn around to do what he did, but probably somewhere in the middle this year. Flores is a good coach. O'Connell's a good coach, a little overrated, but still a good coach. And before we get to Doug, the last one I'll get to, and I'll talk about it with Doug. The Vrabel-Russini stuff, how are you not betting Patriots under 9.5, missed the playoffs? I mean, the Super Bowl hangover is always an issue for the team that loses the Super Bowl. They had such an easy schedule last year. You're going to have a first-place schedule. And now it's just hard to believe Vrabel's going to come in focused. This isn't going to bother him. He's going to be organized and good to go. This, to me, just looks like a mess. I know you're going from the season they had last year down to 9 wins, and there is baked in some regression in the schedule. To me, I still like the over there because I just think, or the under on the Patriots. I just think there is, that's a disastrous combination between the Vrabel stuff. And you can say, oh, the players don't care, all the stuff. When you have a coach who's just not, and who knows how locked in will be when the season starts, but it's hard to say, well, this is just no issue at all. He'll be fine. And you throw in the schedule, the Super Bowl hangover stuff. To me, this is 8-9, 9-7. I know they got a young quarterback, and maybe that trumps a lot of this, but I think that'll be tough with their schedule. And I do like the Patriots under. We'll see what Doug Kazarian likes. We'll talk NBA playoffs. We'll talk NFL draft. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcasts. You can catch him now, DougKazarian.com, where he does a great job. I recommend you checking it out. And he joins us now. And what a coincidence. It's Doug Kazarian. Doug, what's going on, man?
Yeah, funny how that works, right? Like, funny how that works. But no, good to be with you, Will. Obviously, I always enjoy talking shop, for lack of a better word, with games and stuff, breaking down over text. And sometimes I'm joining you on VSIN, but good to be here and on your podcast.
It's the old the line, the joke from Sopranos, when Christopher says to Tony, goes, isn't it some coincidence that Lou Gehrig had Lou Gehrig's disease? And then Tony goes, how many times are you going to tell that stupid joke? All right, a lot to do. Great games on Monday, dramatic games. Usually the first round, it's hit or miss. You know, how many of the series are competitive, how many of the games are competitive. But this first round is delivered. Now, we're recording this before Celtics Sixers. I guess they're just underway, and Lakers Rockets. So we'll stay away from that. I'll just start here. Pistons and Magic. To me, I've said this all along, but people listening probably just sick of hearing it, but the one doesn't look like a one and the eight doesn't look like an eight. I think Orlando is every bit as good as them. I like them here in game four. I really think they win this series. Am I over-enthusiastic here? What's your take on this game and this series?
No, I think what you said is one team's looked the part since game one. Now, I was heavy on the Pistons in game two just because it's so hard to steal both games. And usually if a game one loses at home is a big favorite, they usually blow them out in game two. And we finally saw that in the second half. I think Orlando's tough to handicap because we all had high expectations coming into the season, but they battled injuries. Now, they're not the first team to battle injuries, so I don't want to be full of excuses, but you do have to wonder, like, if this version of the team is who they should be, right? Especially with Franz Wagner starting to come into his own off the injury. And this just seems like a team that we thought was their ceiling, especially with Suggs playing the way he is. And the silver lining in battling injuries all year, Will, you know this, is the role players evolve, right? So guys like Anthony Black got a lot more run this year because of the injuries. And I would say in that with guys like Peyton Watson and whatnot with the Nuggets is once that is the glass, you know, that is the silver lining with it all, is you have guys who have a lot of valuable minutes under their belt when they need to be sort of in the rotation in the playoffs. And so guys like Black and some others can come up huge. And then also Detroit, everyone thought that they are just so dependent on Cade Cunningham that we're seeing there's no real counter to the counter in terms of the game planning. But I also think it comes down to Jalen Duren and this off the court saga with Angel Reese and Wendell Carter. I mean, it sounds so stupid, but lesser things have divided it, you know, have factored into the equation. So I literally think Duren is not the same because of that.
I am not aware of this. What's the story?
Okay.
If I don't know.
So he used to date Angel Reese. And she broke up, and now she's dating Wendell Carter. And I think that's literally all it is.
Oh, wow.
I think there's an edge that's missing with Duren, and I don't know if it's in his head or what, but clearly he's not like the same sort of fierce competitor. And I don't know. Like, I just don't know what it is. Maybe something was said in the trash talk. We've seen stuff like this throughout the regular season. I forget who the other player was. It was Brandon Ingram and another guy were going like back to back down the stretch in the fourth quarter, and they were like each. You know, they had each were exes of the same girl or something stupid like that. So we've seen stuff like that. I mean, you see Klay Thompson all moody these days, and we're getting more information regarding that. So look, they're. I hate saying this as part of the handicap, but look, Duren has not been the same for these three games, and it seems like there's something of substance here.
Detroit laying 2.5 for game four. Series is a coin flip. Totals 214.5. If you had to play any of that, your play would be what?
I think Orlando. I think Detroit's not broken, but I just don't want to be laying points on the road. I'm not going to play it, but and the total's low enough that I think the Magic, because the Magic want to score quickly, and Detroit's offense can bog down, and they just become so reliant on getting somebody else to make some threes, whether it's Herter off the bench or Robinson, just someone to make threes. I think that's they can score enough, but I think Orlando's the play. I really do. They're at home. Let's not forget that. And I thought Detroit, having playoff experience a year ago, would make it so they wouldn't crumble here, but it hasn't been the case, unfortunately, for them. So I lean Orlando, at least. I'm not betting Detroit. Most people are going to bet Detroit. I think it's a bounce-back spot, like we saw the Knicks bounce back and even the series. I'm not as ready to go there just yet.
40-1 still to win the East if they get by Detroit. Who knows? Cavs and maybe the Raptors at this point. Still probably not.
Cavs are a mess. Cavs are the biggest farce.
Would you play the 40-1?
Yeah, anyone who spends money on the Cavs to win the East is wasting money. This team has no defense whatsoever. You cannot pick on it. I mean, I know the Pacers made it through the East a year ago, but it also took some heroic performances, and their offense was so good. I think Cleveland is just a joke of a team. Like, they might advance. I expect them to advance this round. I mean, they're just not sort of a championship metal team. So if you like the Orlando, I'm not opposed to that, because what they were in the regular season, their power rating, everything, is not who we're seeing right now. And I don't think it's just like, oh, Detroit was a farce of a one seed. No, I think the Magic, just the timing of it all, they're actually finally playing like the team we thought they would at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and I've made the point, if you just go back to October season win totals, Detroit was 45.5, 46.5. Right. Orlando was 51.5, 52.5, in that range. So this is, again, just not a typical 1-8. Nuggets and Timberwolves, boy, it's been ugly for Jokic. He's been dad. Now all the discourse, he's been overrated this whole time, which to me is ridiculous. But look, they're down 3-1. It's been dad. They're a huge favorite in game 5. They do get 5 at home, and they would get 7 at home. And Minnesota is all beat up. Any thoughts here, game, series, or otherwise?
Yeah, I would probably lay it. I don't think Denver's going to roll over. I think there's something to be said. Like, the dangled carrot is what you said, the injuries, right? There is a path for them to come back. I think that the coach is being exposed a little bit. Michael Malone, sometimes the tough love is what you need. And they obviously made a change a year ago. I think they can roll them here. But the problem with the betting against Minnesota in these spots is they're so deep. They can just throw an entirely different wonky lineup. And if those guys go off, there's really, like, you know, Bones Highland or whatever. Like, this is not a team that's top heavy missing two guys. It's a team that has a second unit. You just let it go and see what happens. So they could lose by 30, but they could also have a game like they did in the second half the other night. I'm not believing the Gobert is the Jokic stopper. I think that's so stupid. Like, the highlight reel that people were trying to use from game 3, I saw Jokic just missing 3-pointers. Right. Now, a couple times he went inside and Gobert challenged or even blocked a shot. But for the most part, it was the Joker missing shots. I think what's important here is that Gobert allows you to at least defend Jokic one-on-one, where he can't just pick apart your defense with some stunts and some collapsing defenders in the help defense role. I think that's the key. Is Jokic is going to get his, but Gobert is going to make him earn it. But he's not going to have 15 assists as well and make all these role players chime in. So I would lay it before I took it, at least in game 4. But I think Minnesota's got the better coach, and certain guys are playing better. But I still don't think the Nuggets are going to go away quietly. I still think there's a path here for them to come back and win the series.
Who do you think wins the series?
I think Minnesota. I think they're just fresher. I think Denver really showed their fatigue / age at the end of game 2. And Ant wasn't even playing that great, right? He didn't even shoot that great in 3. But I think what McDaniel said about the lack of defense for Denver, I do think there's a little bit of a, I don't know, complacency is the wrong word, but defeated sort of mindset that I think deep down the Nuggets know they can't win at all. So do they even want to win the series, kind of thing? They're kind of not broken, but I just wonder if their spirit's dejected.
If this goes Minnesota in whatever, 5, 6, 7, regardless, and it looks as ugly as it's looked, Jokic has next year and then a player option for the year after. I know he's not this type of guy. I know, you know, it's usually the European guys are not the ones that are asking out. It's more the AAU guys that know each other. Is there a world here where Denver says, you know what? Or maybe Jokic says, you know what? Look around. We're not good enough. I don't see a path for us to be good enough. I want to go somewhere else. Is that possible in your mind?
It's always possible, right? Because certain guys, all they need to be doing, you know, the moods can change. I'm a Laker fan, but I had heard like, oh, don't, like, Giannis a year away. And then after that, it's Jokic. Like, it's not that crazy that Jokic would want to play with Luka. It's not. And I've never ruled the Lakers out. Like, people, like, a long time ago when the Lakers had Gasol and everything, everyone made fun of me when I said, no, you can package this and this and get Chris Paul and Dwight Howard. Everyone's like, oh, yeah. You sure you want to, like, add Michael Jordan while you're at it? I'm like, look, the going rate is X, Y, and Z, and they have that, right? Like, these are real trades. And then sure enough, those trades actually ended up happening. So do they have the assets? Probably not. But if Jokic wants to go there, then the asking price comes down. And if they're going to lose him in free agency, then the asking price comes down even further. So I would think Jokic would probably want a place to go I mean, this isn't where like Miami is closer plane flight to wherever, you know, it's not one of those situations. But I wouldn't rule it out. I mean, the organization's healthy, right? I don't know what he feels about the coach. I don't know what he feels about Jamal Murray and stuff like that. But remember, this is the first year Murray was an all-star. So he hasn't exactly had the greatest supporting cast. I do like the pieces they've added around him. And I thought they had the makings, but Cam Johnson's been a bust. And Aaron Gordon's hamstring is fragile. So that, you know, with the loaded West, with the Thunder and the Spurs, maybe that's enough to turn him off. And maybe you have to go join forces like other teams did. I mean, we all make fun of LeBron for going to Miami, but don't forget, he went there to battle Boston, which is the first big three.
I agree. The Lakers, I'm sure, obviously would be interested. Luka and Jokic, they would have interest in playing with each other. Like, what does that trade look like, though? Where do you even start? I know they've got access to some picks, but like you got to have something you can sink your teeth into. All right, Denver got, I mean, this is one of the great players of all time, whether he's 10, 15, 20. Right. Of course, you know, recency bias, people are like, oh, he's not that high. Regardless, you got to get something back. Can the Lakers actually muster enough to make that, you know, conversation entertaining here for Denver?
Well, I think they're going to let LeBron go, have Austin Reeves re-sign, so it'd be a Reeves package. But it'd be a lot of role players, a lot of picks. But you're right. Like, there's nothing you can – there's no fair value because you can't play eight guys. You can only play five. So getting a bunch of guys for one guy, it just doesn't make any sense because what are you – great, you deepen your bench. But all that matters is star power in the NBA. But if they're going to lose Jokic anyway – I mean, that's the thing. Jokic just demand a trade, argue for it, all that, much like Anthony Davis did. And then it was orchestrated. So it would have to be one of those situations. But no, there's no fair market value unless you get a guy who's another top five, top 10 player.
I'll give you the floor here. Any other series? I'm sure OKC and Houston. If you're looking for an easy winner, I would recommend OKC on the series price, I think, has a good chance to get home. What a waste of time that series is. I'll give you the floor, though. Knicks, Hawks, Blazers, and Spurs, Raptors, and Cavs, which we mentioned. Anything you'd like to discuss here?
I did lay 650 with the Thunder to win game one and the series.
There you go.
I thought that was pretty cheap, and I thought they'd be ready, especially because I thought all those teams that played in the play-in would have, like, nothing left in the tank. Of course, Orlando was the only one that did. So I really like, at first glance, Portland in game five. I'm trying to look up how many – they should be getting a bunch of points. And yes, 11.5. So typically, obviously you can't have blanket rules, but one of my main rules is teams often do not cover three straight games. Okay. It's very hard. It just goes back to that gas tank thing. Like, how much is left in the tank?
Right.
So I was getting a little worried at the end of the game when there was tempers flaring. I don't want any animosity. I want San Antonio fat and happy coming back home against a team they just handled. This team's young. Closing out a series is very difficult, okay? It takes a different level of intensity. The Blazers have talent. They showed that in game one and two, or really game two. They will play looser, and they will play hard. They're not a team that's going to roll over. Like you said, we're taping this before the Houston game. I have concerns whether Houston's going to roll over. I don't have those concerns with the Blazers. I think you're getting 11.5, okay? On a team that's going to take them down to the wire. I really think it's going to be a tough closeout game. And, you know, with energy and effort, they're going to get loose rebounds. They're going to initiate fouls. It's going to be one of those games. I think it's going to be – I like them first quarter, first half. I just don't think Portland's going away quietly. I think they're too well coached, and they have too much sort of a backbone with leaders like Jrue Holiday. They just got to hit some shots. And also, Spurs have started really slowly the last two games.
Right.
And usually, it's kind of like – of course, Will, you were the best student ever throughout your academic years. But you know how it is. You go into a test, you haven't prepared that well, and you ace it. You're just so much more less likely to have a different approach the next time. Like, we as guys want to get away with what we can. I just think San Antonio prepped. Whatever they did, mindset, they're going to go in. They're not going in like blood in the water, like off a loss, right? They're coming in fat and happy. I think the Blazers are a great bet. The three-point shot is the variance. It's very annoying. They have all these open shots, and what can you do? But for the most part, I think they're going to be the hungrier team, the more buttoned-up team. I think there's great line value here with the Blazers in this game.
Knicks probably figure out a way to get two out of three. Five will be at home, seven would be at home. They're a 6.5-point favorite. I don't love the idea of laying it, and now they are a pretty big series price. Anything interests you in that series?
Yeah, I don't know if I can lay the 6.5. It's pretty high. I mean, just because I asked myself, would I be shocked if the dog won outright? No. No, I wouldn't, because I like this Hawks team. I mean, some of that, those win streaks, you know, it's like, oh, they haven't lost at home in a month and a half. It's like, yeah, who'd they play down the stretch? Right. But I like just the overall temperament of the team. Defensive-minded, for the most part. They have a couple guys who are awesome defenders. They're just going to need to hit some shots. Not that C.J. McCollum is the best player ever, but he can be a bucket, you know, if he gets hot. The Knicks can get in their own way sometimes. And it's not like everybody's clicking. I mean, Bridges was, you know, running. I mean, Towns was great in the last game. So I think I'd have to take the 6.5 here. But, you know, let me ask you this, Will. All these games, as series go on, they die, right? The unders start hitting. And we're seeing this today on Sunday with these, the scoring is just coming down. I've been on a couple unders. I prefer these high totals, like the Nuggets T-Wolves series. It's harder when these totals are in the 200s to fire blindly on these unders. But man, I mean, it's a very simple sort of rationale. When you're during the regular season, you're facing a new opponent, right? Sometimes we have these two game series, but for the most part, you're facing the same, a different opponent every time, and you're not used to their offensive sets and whatever. But the defense picks up, the urgency, right? The offensive possessions are more measured, and then you're more familiar with the other team's defense. And if you're matched up with a specific guy, you know his moves, you know his tendencies. So you're not getting caught off guard with slip screens and backdoor cuts. So just everything is just an effort to score, especially with the referees swallow the whistle a little bit. So that's why these series go under. I never think, as you go along, I never think the market adjusts enough. Like alt unders, I mean, this Spurs game went under by 15 or so. So those are the types of wagers I look at deep in the series, starting game 4 or 5, you know, right around then is when I expect series to die. Unless it's just ridiculous shooting or the pace of these teams is out of control. So I'm looking at the under in like all these games.
Fast forward a few weeks from now, the final four teams are who? The conference finals in each conference is what? Western and Eastern. Who you got?
So I really unfortunately think the Thunder are just going to walk to the finals and win it all. These teams are either beat up or, I mean, they have that sort of championship experience under their belt where they have the swagger and the confidence. Not that the Suns are going to, but I mean, are the Lakers or Rockets really going to put up a fight against the Thunder? No. So we got OKC there. I think the Spurs are going to be there eventually, right? I think they're going to have a little hiccup against the Blazers, maybe lose that game, honestly. And then I think the Nuggets prevail. I think the Spurs are just have too many ways to beat you. And obviously, if Ant's hurt, you know, that obviously is a factor. East is a little tougher. I'll take the Magic. I do. I think they're tougher than the Cavs. I think this Cavs team is just very sucks here saying it because I like Atkinson, but they're poorly coached. They have no defensive intensity. They're lost on rotations. Mobley hangs on the perimeter too much. They're so disjointed on offense. Honestly, I love their bench more than anything. I think their bench is a difference maker. So I'll take the Magic. And I do think the Celtics get there. I know the Knicks think they have their number, but I'll take the Celtics. I still think I think last year taught them a lot, A. And B, I think running through sort of Brown makes them better. There was a little too much hero ball a year ago with Tatum. And I just think the bench players, guys like Shireman and all that, I think they're just more. Remember last year they had injuries and Horford wasn't right. You know, this year's they're different and they're a little deeper. And even those valuable minutes like guards and stuff, I think all the pieces fit well, even though Derek White hasn't been great. I think he can flip the switch at any time. So I like this Boston team. I think they're facing the Magic. I'll give the Magic. They've convinced me.
Hey, let's call it in right now. We don't even need to play the games. Let's get it going. That works for me. Last NBA question, and this will be a nice little segue to the NFL draft. NBA draft, the lottery's in a few weeks. That should be fun, an eventful night where, you know, who gets the first pick, who keeps their pick. There's got a lot of drama, especially this year with a good draft with the lottery. Who do you think the first pick will be? Does it depend on the team? Have you made any bets? Are you looking at any bets?
No, I haven't. I think it's a little tough here because if the Jazz get it, you know, they're taking Tabanza. That's their guy. But I don't know who the pick is. Otherwise, I think it's super interesting. I think betting on the lottery is tough. I think betting on the picks is much more fun. But there's such a domino effect in this that I don't really I haven't taken any flyers. I did like the flyers people were taking with Acuff at 150-1, stuff like that. But he's just too undersized. And I just don't see it happening. I mean, even at those ridiculous prices. I think DeBanza goes more than likely. But I say it every year, like the Peterson stuff. My whole thing is if someone was convinced he's the best player in the draft, he's going to go one. Okay. I don't think the sitting out and all that stuff, I don't think it matters. Like I laughed at people when Cam Ward sat out the second half of a bowl game, said, oh, he's going to cost himself the number one pick. I'm like, you guys are crazy. The talent will always win out unless the guy committed like a giant felony. He's going now. There could be injury concerns with the health and maybe the attitude. Maybe, but ultimately, if they think he's the best, they're taking him. I just don't think they care. I think all these drafts, there's always potential of a bust or whatever, for lack of a better word. So if you're convinced the talent is there and it's all about upside and the chances to strike oil, it's all about the chances to strike oil. Because all these guys, like Ingram, great, he had a good playoff. Like, I would trade all these guys after you know they're not the superstar. As soon as you know they're not a superstar, trade them, package them, boom. You got to move on to, you got to keep striking oil, get bullets in the gun, because like a Giannis around pick 15 will hit, SGA around pick 8 or whatever will hit. You just got to keep going until you can actually have an absolute top 5 guy, because that's how you win. And if you think Peterson's the guy, and is DeBanza the number one player on a championship team? Maybe. I think he's more number two. But Peterson has that. I mean, there were flashes. Now, they were only flashes. But I think teams are going to talk themselves into Peterson. I really do. So I would bet, maybe if I had to make one bet, I would make Peterson at plus 260 at FanDuel. I would not bet Boozer. It's, I think his ceiling is like Sengun. I don't think they're going to make that pick.
All right, NFL draft. We are legally obligated when we do content to declare winners and losers, which I always play along. I do think it's kind of silly. These GMs get paid millions of dollars and do this stuff round the clock, and we're just sitting here going, oh, good pick, bad pick. That being said, I'll play along. Don't love what the Steelers are doing. Drew Aller, not a fan. Seems like they were confused in the first round. Let Lemon slip through. I always like what Philly does, and I thought they got really better at the skill guys. But I don't know. Do you have a team or two that you liked or didn't like what they did?
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay giving grades and everything, but it has to be based on what you know now. It doesn't mean that's going to be the grade you give in 3 years when you look back at the draft. I think that's always something to keep in mind. But, I mean, I do think you can only assess a decision based on the data you had at the time. So I will say this. I think some people get a little too caught up on big boards. It's like, why would you draft that guy at this number when he was more of a 15 picks lower? It's like, well, you didn't have to pick 15 lower, and you don't know if somebody else is going to reach a little bit. Like, to go off topic a little bit, Quinnen Williams, like, I love that the Cowboys traded for him last year and then signed him. You just don't know if he's going to be your – so you give up a pick, but at least you know what you have, and you're not rolling the dice. Everyone lives in this fantasy world. I even like to trade for Sauce Gardner. There's like 11 things that have to happen. At that point of the season for the Colts, like, 8 of them were already happening. The timing, like, you got to go for it. At some point, you got to push the envelope. You can't have it all perfect and deferential your way and get the best of every trade at every time. Sometimes you just have to like give more than you're getting to because the timing of everything. So like even the Rams, like I think it was a bad move at 13. Okay. But if you didn't love like Reuben Bain or someone and you're convinced this guy, I mean, he's the son of a coach, played in the right system. He had the wrong sort of supporting cast, no O-line. Like if you think this guy, I understand it. I wouldn't have done it because the margin of error is so small and you have a win now moment and you really need to go all, because the whole point of this is to win it all. But the other point of it is to have a quarterback that you can win a Super Bowl with for 15 years. So if they think that is the case, maybe they tried to trade down to 15. But Arizona, remember, their head coach came from their system and maybe he knows the Rams really like him from just off-season meetings just meetings that they had in season. And so they were both sort of like buying for the same guy and there was demand there. So I at least understand it. I don't love it because they have to pay the guy at the 13th pick rate. But I think we get a little too caught up sometimes in big boards and whatnot. I like some of the picks. I think drafting a running back is stupid. I said it last year with Genty. I mean, is Menungai like such a worse running back than Ashton Genty? And he went like 6 rounds later. You know, it's like good, so point, stupid, some of this stuff, right? I Love is awesome, right? Like he's a great player, but I mean, clearly the owner weighed in, front office that has to like control optics and, you know, excitement and fan base. I mean, it's so stupid. That lasts for like a month and then the team stinks, but whatever. So those are like plays I laugh at because of just the importance of the position, what you have to pay them. And then when they're up for the next contract, look, if you're a team that's you know, in the 20s, or you're a playoff team that happened to have a future pick, and now you get a, like the Bears did with, you know, you have a high pick and you're running back away from a playoff run, then fine. Then I love that move. But that's like arguably like the worst pick of the draft. I really think that. Maybe Tate at four, because I think he's getting by on just the Ohio State sort of success of recent wide receivers. But I would have done a different position if I'm the Titans. And I don't know if he's as special as everyone thinks he is. So I think those are like two of the worst picks. And they could be really good players, but I just think the trade-off of having a pick that high, I think you need home runs.
All right. The books have famously become very tentative in terms of posting markets, just letting you bet this. Are they making a mistake? Do you think that will change? What are your thoughts here on the books' approach to the NFL draft?
Yeah, I wrote an article in The Athletic. I mean, I changed some of the verbiage I had from my rough draft to the final version I submitted. But, like, they whine. They're a bunch of whiners. And they really do this to protect their laziness and ineffectiveness. Like, they can make money at this. Like, they have an advantage. They just don't know what they're doing. And, yes, the smartest people in the world are on this side of the counter. I get it. But I love what Johnny Avello is doing at DraftKings. He goes, look, we welcome it. We want to serve our customers. We're getting better at it. He's like, when I first put up lacrosse lines 10 years ago when he was at the Wynn, it was hard. But you get better at it each year. And there's a nuance to it. But they just don't want to put in the work, because it's really easy being a bookmaker when you just follow the screen and copy openers. I mean, there's been times over the years, Will, where one offshore book put up a second half line and just did a manual error and had the wrong team -5. And like seven books copied them.
Yeah.
So, like, it just shows you they're just reading a screen. Like, doing that in their sleep is really easy. And obviously they're smart people, and they just don't want to do it. So it's easier to complain about something that's difficult when you can just, that protection gives you, you know, if you have to answer to the suits upstairs. And maybe I'm a little bit more passionate about this, because when I won my draft prop 5 years ago, a bunch of people cried foul and said inside information. It's like, no, it's not. It's just, you guys are not that great. I got super lucky and there was, you know, nine things had to happen and the stars aligned, and I'm just, you know, outsmarted some people, some odds makers, and who were just asleep at the wheel. It's not inside information. I mean, the people going pick three don't even know what's going to happen one and two. Sure. This was a second round pick. So just, sure. You know, I just get like it was just an attack on my integrity and intelligence, because they were indirectly saying I wasn't smart enough to do this. So I must be cheating. Like, no, you guys aren't that smart. You're lazy. Now, there's different ways to do it. If I'm the house, like I think a couple years ago, Caesars, I don't know if they still do it, but they can't just say, oh, our NFL team's going to handle the draft. Like, no, they assigned one guy, and that was his only thing for 2 or 3 months, because it took a different skill set. It took 24 hours. You know, you had to be immersed in this, and you had to understand. So, yeah, you may have to change your workflow and infrastructure, right? But I asked Avello that when I interviewed him for the article. He said, no, because we want our NFL team knowing all these guys, so when the fall, they're making power ratings and stuff. So, There was some added value to that sort of, you know, down the road factor, but maybe you should do certain things. I always say, and I don't want to give away all my secrets, but if I'm an odds maker, I keep these guys at like -$3 for like an index bet. Like, I don't go higher than that.
Right.
Now, if it's the first quarterback taken and it's Mendoza, fine. But some of these other indexes, they get burned because they get so afraid of these phony favorites. And it's like, let them. I'd be more afraid of the 5-to-1s, the 8-to-1s, the 10-to-1s. Let all these people bet -230 on linebacker to go first for the Giants or whatever, right? Whatever position. Like, these books shouldn't be afraid of getting beat on minus money. They should be afraid of the other stuff.
All right. Last one. To me, Vrabel. No, it was good. I completely agree. Vrabel, everything that's going on with New England, to me, New England, and I haven't heard this story discussed from a betting standpoint, they check every box for a fade. Super Bowl loser, a really easy right. schedule, now a hard schedule, and now this Vrabel stuff, it's very hard to sell. You know what? It's not going to be a distraction. It'll be fine. What's your take on all this? And to you, the Patriots, to you, are they a team you're looking to fade here?
Absolutely looking to fade. I think we learned a lot in the Super Bowl, but let's not forget, like, there's a couple tip passes from Darnold on his own goal line that could have been picked, and
sure.
maybe the Super Bowl plays out differently. I thought the game plan was terrible. They weren't the better team at all. Don't get me wrong, but I think Will Campbell got exposed. Obviously, they are well coached. I mean, Vrabel, you know, he has squeezed the talent. I mean, he got the number one seed in the AFC with Tannehill. Okay,
right.
He knows what he's doing. But I wonder, part of the reason what he's doing, he knows how to galvanize a locker room. And he's a leader of men kind of thing, and I wonder if there's a domino effect to this, if he is if more stuff comes out that he's sort of a phony and all this stuff, because he was big. I mean, I'm sure he's not the only coach, but he was big on treating the security guards respectfully and knowing everyone's name and being, you know, just being a like accountability and just all that. You're a reflection of the team and the franchise. What you do is, you know, domino effect in the locker room. So he was a guy who was a former player, obviously, and had that sort of demeanor as a player. And I wonder about locker rooms. It's a very fragile thing in football more than most. So, but again, the division in theory should be better. We think the Bills might be better. The Jets could be competent. I don't love their coach or their quarterback. And who knows about Miami? Probably not. But in general, I mean, there was the things broke their way for sure last year. And we all know, we all fade, all that stuff. Like, it's unlikely to happen the same way.
Totally agree. Doug, you're the best man. DougKazarian.com. Where else can we find you? What do you want to plug?
Yeah, no, thanks. I mean, that's sort of your one-stop shop for all my stuff. And I'm writing for The Athletic these days. I'm writing for the New York Post. I do a Monday through Friday show for Bet Rivers at 4 p.m. Eastern. We've been absolutely scorching. I mean, we're like 140 and 101 or something in our best bets since we launched. This isn't like we're not choosing a stretch here to give out. Like, we're up like 25 units. We've been on fire. It's really the show I always wanted to do, even going back to ESPN. Like, we literally just go through that day's games. And if we want to lead with a first quarter money line, we'll just lead with that. So we really go down the games, and it's all about that day. And we talk about it from a betting perspective, but also incorporate, obviously, sports narratives that certainly apply. But it's all on YouTube. So go check it out. All the information's on my website.
Doug, long overdue. Appreciate it, man. You do a great job. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it. Well, you do as well.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Doug Kazarian. We will be back on Wednesday. See you then.